A radio gorgeous welcome to the extraordinarily gorgeous Grace Victory.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
Seriously pleased to be here with you.
Oh, thank you.
Your book. Your.
My book.
Book.
Weird.
No filter.
Yes. Very weird experience for me having, well, everyone is able to like read my life story. Very overwhelming, but also insanely exciting and very surreal. Like, even though it's right in front of us now, it's not real to me. Like, it's not real.
Why is that? Because you are a YouTube sensation.
Thanks.
You're on television. You work with big campaigns. You're working about body image.
Yeah.
Is it the fact that it's physical and it's concrete?
Yeah. Like, it's very... I don't know. It's just bizarre to me because I've been doing YouTube for a while and I've always done TV stuff from a very young age. So I'm kind of used to that. But then going to the publishing world and having an actual book, like being a published author and going into like Waterstones. Like, I'm used to seeing my face on the internet, but going into like real life stores and then my big face, my book is going to be there. And that just blows my mind. I just find it really... surreal. And like, it's like a dream come true. Yeah, it's like a dream come true, you know?
You especially didn't think this was going to happen when you were a young girl.
Yes.
And your dedication in the book is for any woman who needs a reason not to give up, this is it.
Yeah.
And why didn't you give up? Because you tried.
Yeah.
We'll get to
plenty
that.
Plenty of times.
In many ways.
Yeah. I can't always explain the feeling, but even when things are really, really bad for me, there was always this little quiet voice in my head that was telling me, like, there's so much more to life. And I always had this, like, river of self-belief in me. I can't explain it. I think I was... When you have a difficult childhood, it goes two ways. You can either go down the route that's sort of destined for you, or you can turn your pain into passion. And for some reason, I went down that route. And I don't really know why. I just think that I dreamed big. And I just knew that there was life outside of the town that I grew up in. There was life outside of my family home. And that I was meant to be someone. I don't know. It's weird. I think I was just destined to do what I'm doing now. I went with that gut feeling, thank God. And then it manifested into what it is now, which is... very bizarre. But the flip side is I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if it wasn't for my story and the stuff that I've been through and eating disorders and domestic violence and childhood trauma. So I really have all of those difficult subjects to thank because it's enabled me to, you know, do what I'm doing.
It seemed to me one of the first voices from inside of you that you instinctively knew that your family was not giving you enough support was you had two, what people call imaginary friends.
Yeah, I did.
But they were your first
co-conspirators,
cheerleaders, mentors, and sort of at least...
a higher power.
Yes, well, and also something that you had to make that physical almost and outside of yourself. So it wasn't just your voice saying this.
Yeah, it was like, even now, I don't think they're imaginary. Like, they were so real to me. And they were Kath and Rick. They're in the book. I would get these two visitors come to me and play with me and talk to me. And they were always there when I was sad. And then when I got to around 16, 17, I think, even a bit before that, they disappeared. But, like, I still think they're real. My mum's like, they're imaginary. They're not real. But sometimes that's the way that a child's mind copes with things, and I guess that's how I was coping as a child. And that, from a young age, was, I think, how I knew that there was things happening in the world outside of what I knew. And I think I'm really spiritual, and that could be because of that experience I had growing up.
I
completely forgot
angel.
That was in the book.
Well, they're sort of more like guardian angels.
Yeah,
than
looking over
friends.
Me. I think I must have, because a lot of people you know, my family have had the same childhood as me and friends and stuff, and I'm sort of the only one that's broken free from that, you know, environment. So I must have had someone looking over me, you know, to protect me on this long road that I'm on.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
I also think you're very good at getting what you need.
Yeah.
There was a certain point, I think when you were 13, you moved houses.
Yeah.
Prior to that, you lived with your mother and your sister in a flat.
Yeah.
Your father and his family were in, out.
Shake it all about.
Yeah. Very messy.
Yeah.
Violent.
Yeah.
Kidnappings.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Physical, emotional abuse of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And then your mom said, no, you know, we're moving to this house and it's going to be just for us.
Yeah.
And from just that small message, you took that to mean very literally.
Yeah.
And your father came around to your new house one time.
Yeah, he did. So it was about 2 years later, and he came in. And my dad had this way of making an argument out of anything and everything. And I felt like he came over to have an argument with my mum or to belittle her and make her feel away. He came in, started shouting and being angry. I've actually got no idea what it was about, but obviously blamed my mum for something. And my sister was upstairs crying. And something inside me was like, I'm not having this. I went downstairs and I was right in his face, and he's quite short and I was getting taller than him at this point. And I said, you need to get the F out of my house. This isn't for you. You don't pay rent. And at the time I was working in a shop, like just making some money. I was helping my mum out, and I said, I pay more money than you. And that took him aback, because it was probably the first time a woman, let alone a child, had, you know, confronted him about his behaviour. And, like, the fear in my mum's eyes, I will never, ever forget. And that's what gave me the motivation to speak on her behalf. And I said, you need to get out or I'm calling the police. And he went. I called the police anyway. But he went. And that was the moment for me where I knew that I didn't have a dad. But it was also okay that I didn't have a dad, because my mum played both parts. And I've probably seen him, I would say, like, five to ten times since that incident, and I'm 26 now, because I wasn't having it. And when you grow up in an environment where you have to be the adult and you have to think like an adult, and, you know, there's no boundaries, you're anxious, you're sort of stepping on eggshells, you do snap. And I snapped like a fully grown adult because I was sick of it. And it was a very empowering moment, I have to say. And I had no fear, which is also amazing. So I wasn't scared to say anything. It was more like, you scare my mum and I'm not okay with that. And my dad was never physically abusive towards me. It was more like his abuse was through my mum and it affected the family home. And I guess I felt like I needed to protect her. So I did in that very moment.
Hmm. Well, and also I connected that as well with something now that you're very clear that you need a safe space.
Yeah.
And you saw your mom had tried to create that safe space for you, and
yeah,
this was violating the
yeah,
safe space. Uh-uh.
Yeah, the boundaries he'd overcrossed. And it's so weird that you say that, because I'm still in therapy. I talk very openly about therapy and the issues that I go through. And I recognize that I'm very triggered with my eating disorder and my emotions if my boundaries are violated. So it's really weird that you've recognised that, because only now I'm putting the two and two together. So I'm fine. But if I feel like someone's overstepped my boundaries, I'm like, no, I can't have that. So that's very interesting.
We learn as we go.
Yes, exactly.
And you, I mean, your story is so inspiring. And I have to tell you that I've experienced a lot of the things that you have experienced.
Yeah.
And I love the fact, and I think why you are the internet's big sister, is that you are so clear that I'm not fixed, I'm not done, I fuck up,
yeah,
I'm going to keep fucking up, I'm going to be depressed, things just don't go away, there's not an automatic fix, it's a process, and it's a keeping
yeah,
on doing, and it's a keep learning.
Yeah, like... it's not. I think it's naive to think that as humans, especially when we've had trauma, that you know, you go to therapy or you do this and you're going to be fixed. And it's not. It's an ongoing process. And, you know, you can be happy but also sad because you relate to what's happened to you, and that's okay. And I'm very open about that. I'm not perfect. I never will be perfect. But I still deserve love and respect. And I think it resonates with people because we live in this society that everything's on Instagram and social media, everything's perfect, and there's, you know, everything's great, and there's a unicorn flying through the sky. It's all so dramatized, and you can doctor photos, you can make out like everything's great. And I tried to do that, it didn't work, so I'm trying the opposite, and I'm saying, look, like, these are my scars, physical and emotional, and this is me. And it's so empowering and like a breath of fresh air to just own my own truth. And that's what I'm living by. Like, this is what's happened to me. This is what I'm going to do with my life. And I'm still worthy. I'm good enough.
And it's funny because I, you know, people like to blame the internet for everything. And this idea of like, oh, you have it, and this scripted reality, and you put, you know, you only put happy pictures of yourself on the internet. Meanwhile, you're, you know, going through whatever you're going through privately at home. But you had that experience, and we've all had that experience. It's not as though this only happened with the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, you would go to school and act like the happy extrovert, and then go home and self-harm.
Yeah.
So it's not like, it's not just, not just the fault of the internet. We can do this anywhere.
Yeah, I think it's just that relevant to this generation and people that watch me and will read the book, this is their way of faking it. Obviously, they still go to school and stuff, but back then, we didn't have Instagram and Twitter, thank God. So it's just packaged differently. And it's still an issue. People want to be seen as if everything's great because sometimes it's easier to pretend that you're happy. And you know when you go out and someone says, oh, how are you? You never say, actually, I feel like shit. Because they're like, oh, they don't know what to say.
Yeah.
I've
lost a couple of friendships that way. In actual fact, I feel like fucking shit.
Yeah.
Okay, just wanted to drink.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Don't air.
Yeah, exactly. I just like being honest. Obviously, I don't tell every single person I meet, oh, I had therapy last night, it was terrible, because, you know, it's not appropriate. But I have people that know every part of me, my therapist being one, and then people that only know the business side of me, and that's okay. And I think that's all about growing as an adult and understanding how adult relationships work, which I'm still understanding. And they're hard. Having friendships as an adult is hard. When you're younger, you could just give a packet of Haribo to a friend and be like, let's go and play.
Best friends.
Yeah, now it's completely different. But yeah, I just own my truth, no matter what's happened to me. And I just try to live life as wholly as I can.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings.
Vincent, you're a person who, you didn't have a lot of resources, emotional, economic, physical, when you were growing up. Dance was one thing that...
Mm-hmm.
That was the first thing that... The first way in which you used your body for good.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love dancing. You know, when I was younger, I couldn't actually dance that well, but I got to about 11 or 12, and one day I just got it. It just clicked, and I found rhythm, and I could move, and I loved dancing. And it's so ironic because I went on Facebook today, and I had a message from my bestest friend, Roz, who's in the book, and she was like, I've just heard you on the radio. This is so bizarre. And we were talking about our childhood and how amazing it was, because when you go to stage school, I mean, in the media, it's like, it's made something that it's not, but for me, it was meeting friends that you could connect with in a really safe way, and we just had the best time. Like, it was so fun, and nothing makes me feel like dancing does. Nothing in the world. I've tried other things, nothing does just affects me the way dance does. It's like my home, and I miss it all the time. I really want to go back. But it's finding the time to have an actual hobby outside of everything else being an adult entails. But yeah, dancing and performing, playing dress up was like the best. And maybe as a child, it was also a way to pretend. But I think some children need that to be creative and to play. I definitely had that growing up.
I was gonna say, you had that was the positive side.
Yeah.
On the negative side, you also were looking and really trying, and you had a lot of negative reinforcement. So the first thing, and God bless the internet, went onto the internet, and you know, the first self-hatred, and that being, you know, in the way that dance and expression is addictive and wonderful, you started going into the negative, addictive, and hellish.
Yeah. I had this overwhelming feeling that I had to be thin. But who can blame me? Because when you look on the magazines and in every dance show, it was always very, very thin white women that dominated. And that was never going to be. I can't change my skin colour. And I strived to be that. And then eventually I developed an eating disorder because of it and self-harm. And I lost the weight. I did lose weight. But it was never enough. It was one more pound, one more stone. And that's when I realised that you can't fix your mind by losing weight. It doesn't work that way. And that was a really, really hard moment for me to understand. But yeah, the pressure for dancing is, you know, outrageous. And I was told, oh, if you want to go to a top London dance school, you need to lose weight. And it was always, but I'm talented. I was the top in my school, the top class. Everyone knew who I was. I was in Harry Potter. I was doing all these things, but it always came down to my weight. And that's probably why I'm so proud now, because what I do, yes, obviously my looks play a massive part into my brand, but also I'm big, I'm plus size. I'm not perfect. I've got stretch marks and cellulite, and yet I'm still here paving the way. I've got a book deal. I've got TV documentaries. I've got all these things. And, you know, I was told when I was younger that you had to lose weight to be successful. So that makes me very happy indeed.
And you are a survivor. You're a survivor of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, from your own worst actions to yourself, including ODing on sleeping pills and trying to check out. But you were also raped.
Yeah.
And it seemed like 2006, it was before and after.
Yeah.
I also experienced that myself, literally just 10 years before you did.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because that you clearly made the connection. I mean, okay, because you went from self-harming, say, with throwing up, self-harming with a knife,
yeah.
And then after the rape, self-harming through promiscuity.
Yeah. Self-deprecating behavior, 100%. Yeah.
What... Because I had a different experience. I did, in that moment, I said, so much has been taken from me, and not one more thing, my ability to call the police, not one more thing will be taken from me.
Yeah.
But you didn't. You sat with that.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Mm-hmm. I was very used to dealing with things by myself. So for me, and when I tried to tell someone how I felt, they couldn't help me or they couldn't take away the pain. So for me, it was like, I'm not going to put myself through that trauma of reliving what's happened to me for nothing to be done afterwards. What's the point? And that's how I viewed it for a very, very long time, up until recently. And I internalized it. That's how I cope. That's what I saw around me. You know, I was seeing the men in my life abuse the women and they did nothing about it. So who was I to tell someone? And I think a lot of people internalise a lot of their issues because it's just easier and that's sort of how you cope. And I don't regret not going to the police in the first instance because it's hard. It's really, really hard. As a 16-year-old, you know, I was a child, really. You know, I was already depressed and anxious and trying to lose weight and be an amazing dancer and also have friends and, you know, be this amazing person. I didn't want to talk about it. And I think that's my right. But obviously now that I'm older, it's 10 years later, I realise that it's so important to talk about what's happened to you because it can help so many people. And now I talk to my friends about things and it's amazing and quite sad how many women have been sexually abused or raped. Like it blows my mind how many, it's like one in six or something like that, even probably more. And thinking about it, it's weird because I don't connect with it as if it's me, because obviously I've changed so much and that's like my younger self who I feel so much sadness for, and also like love and admiration and stuff. But it's bizarre thinking about that time, because that if that was happened to me now, I would be so much different. My actions afterwards would be so much different. But at the time, you don't think of that. And hindsight is a wonderful thing. I mean, feminism wasn't massive back then. I didn't know about women and female empowerment. It wasn't a thing. So it happened to me and I sort of accepted it. Because it was like, oh, that's just another thing that I've just added to the trauma. Like, just put that in the box.
And put it on the pile.
Yeah.
My weekday fix? Darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous.
Let's talk about some of the people who helped you find your voice.
Yes.
First, Mary McChrystal.
Oh, my God. She was my religious studies teacher at school. And she was, you know, kind, loving face, kind eyes. And in lessons, it was never just, you know, a board, you've got to write things down. It was always debates and discussion. As you probably tell, I love that. I love a debate. And she was also there emotionally as well. And I can't explain it. She was just an incredible teacher and so different to the usual teachers that I had. And I wish everyone could have been taught by her because she was just amazing. And she taught me about Islam and Christianity, and we talked about abortion and all the relevant things that young people want to know. She was the go-to person, and I think she's just an angel. Love her so much. Love her.
Another one of your angels.
Yeah. Yeah.
And tell me about Jay and Jade and Sweet Dreams, because that's another side to you. There's being mentored turned you into a mentor.
Absolutely. So I was 16 and I was working in a shop called Bay Trading and I absolutely hated it. Hated retail. And they heard about me that I loved singing and dancing, and they were running projects around High Wycombe where I grew up. And it was to be in a choir, it was to dance and just have a very safe place. So me, friends, everyone who was quite urban, quite street from my area, went to a youth club, and it was at a place called Roundhouse. And I was there for 3 years. And then when I turned around 18, they were like, we have developed you into this amazing person. Can you come and work for us and mentor other people? And I was like, oh my God, amazing. So I did. I ran the youth clubs that I used to attend. I did dance classes at a women's refuge and just worked with kids that were just like me. And then we lost government funding, unfortunately, so I had to get a really, really crappy office job. But Jay and Jade were... So Jay is black and Jade was Turkish. So it was the first interracial couple that I'd ever seen that had a really well relationship. And I definitely looked at them like mum and dad. And that's how I still see them today. And it's just... like bizarre, so bizarre. And they did, they helped me recognize what I wanted to do with my life, and they taught me how to help people and how to use all of the stuff that I've, you know, been taught into a bigger scale for YouTube and the book and documentaries and stuff. So they played a massive part in my teenage years. And yeah, they just taught me a lot, and it's nice to look back on my childhood and just have a really, really well couple to look at, because, you know, I grew up in an environment where the women were abused and the men were horrible and abusive. So they were like solace for me. And I babysat their daughter, Zola, who looked like me. It was mad. She had like massive curly hair, and it was just wonderful. And they saved a lot of people's lives, I think. If it wasn't for them, you know, in High Wycombe doing what they did, there would have been way more crime and abuse. So, yeah, love them.
Well, and also, considering stage school, and a lot of people could have just gone and focused on the performance part. And there's somehow, there's sort of a separation in you from the performance part. It's like the introvert, extrovert thing, but the performance part, and that's... job, and that's clear for you.
Yeah.
And you could have just focused on that and been very successful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the bringing together, having been mentored, and as it says on the book, empowered women empower women.
Yeah.
That you're so grateful.
Mm.
And you are well named.
Grace Victory. Yes. Everyone says that.
But you were visited upon a lot of grace, and you feel to return it.
Yeah, I think the extrovert introvert thing and being putting the performance side on, it's empty. Being an extrovert for me is quite empty. And I used to give, and then save nothing from me, and you can't pour from an empty cup. So when I learned about self-care and realising that I actually like being by myself, I like my home comforts and a blanket and chocolate and TV, I love that because when I'm out and about, I am bubbly and I'm excitable and I'm approachable, and that is me. That's not even being fake, that's just who I am. I'm kind of two different versions of Grace. And each one is real and each one is nurtured the way they should be. But yeah, it was empty for me to just be one of them and to, like I said, own my truth and be both is really healthy for me mentally. And I like who I am and I'm very, very grateful because all of the stuff that's happened to me, good and bad, mostly bad, the bad stuff has fueled me. And it's given me a constant hunger and drive. And I'm very, very ambitious and driven. And I won't take no for an answer. I'm partly Virgo. I'm a Virgo. That's probably why as well. and that's a part of me that I love. And it took me a long time to love that part of me. And all that, you know, the extroverted version of Grace is very, very vulnerable still. I'm a very vulnerable person. And I wear my heart on my sleeve. But that's what makes me me. And you can be both. You can be hard and soft and loud and quiet. I think I'm proof of that.
And I think part of you learning to incorporate all of that into your picture of you was discovering your inner child. Tell me a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, so I started therapy like June, July last year. And learning about my eating disorder and my unwell thoughts was to connect with my inner child because childhood trauma affects many adults and all the issues I'm having now as an adult is because of my childhood. So my therapist said to me, you need to connect with your inner child and nurture her because the issues you're facing now is because that part of your life was neglected, whether that was from you, you know, you didn't practice self-care or because of your upbringing. And it's so bizarre. So sometimes I sit and think, and when I feel a bit sad or whatever, I connect with my inner child because, you know, she's damaged. And all of the beliefs I have now are because of her. So I nurture that part of me, whether it's to have my favourite childhood meal or do my favourite childhood thing. I always think of her and she's always there. And that's probably the drive. The drive is to show her, like, yes, I neglected you. I've damaged you, I've cut you, I've thrown up food, I hated my body, I hated you, but now I'm, you know, I'm repaying all of that. And that's sort of the message that I want to get across. And that's what gives me the drive to do what I do, is all because of my baby self. And I guess that will be passed on to her. When I have my own child, I'm going to nurture her in a way that I wish I was. And yeah, connecting with your inner child is one of the best things. Every adult should do it. Like, be fun, be silly. Like, life's too short.
Well, and also, it's easy. I mean, when they have these appeals, they always show a kid this kid, because you don't, when you're feeling unworthy, like, I'm a piece of shit, I don't deserve this. When your worst self is kicking off, you're like, ugh, I'm not worthy. I'll just do this terrible thing for myself and not take care of myself. And then you look at this little kid and you're like, oh, who would hurt that child? And it's a way of getting around yourself and sort of resetting yourself. Yeah.
And your child is always going to be alive. You can be 90 and that child, 4, 5, 10, 11, whatever, is still inside of you. And to neglect that, I think is really, really sad. And I love my inner child. Like, that's the core of who I am. That's my core self. And I owe her everything.
Grace Victory. Thank you so much. And thank you, baby Grace.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It was amazing.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us, contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com, and to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?